This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 336, for the weekend of December 21st through December 23rd. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office, this podcast where Art and myself talk about movies, TV, and other stuff that we find interesting, and we hope that you do too. So say hello to my co-host, Art. How's it going over there?
It's going good. I feel like a long-lost child coming home.
So what he's alluding to is that we took a little break between schedules and whatnot. We haven't recorded for a while, but we're back. Hopefully to get this show and maybe one more before we close the book on 2018.
Yes.
So now, excuse me, let's get to our first segment. And this is where we talk about what happened at the box office last week. And it kind of feels a little more efficient when we are talking about movies every week. But since we haven't recorded in a while... some of our regular listeners don't have too much of frame of reference, but let's go ahead and talk about last week's weekend at the box office. So, for the weekend of December 14th through December 16th, here is your top five. At number one, new release, Spider-Man: Into the Spider-Verse, brought in $35.4 million. And it says here $90 million budget, but I think they're going to be doing... okay. At number two, we have The Mule, $17.5 million, and that's a new release. And number three, in its sixth week of release, we have Dr. Seuss's The Grinch at $11.8 million, with a total gross so far of $239.5 million. At number four, we have Ralph Breaks the Internet in its fourth week of release at $9.3 million. With 154 total million. Yeah, Disney's not doing too bad. And at number five, we have Mortal Engines coughed up a $7.6 million. And that's in its first week of release. So, yeah, $7 million, and they're saying $100 million budget. So, yeah. Now, did you know anything about Mortal Engines?
As far as what? I mean, I've seen the preview. I want to see it.
Well, the thing that kept... bothered me because there were billboards on the freeway as I was driving home or driving to work, and it says from the creators of Lord of the Rings or from the filmmakers of Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
So why don't they just say Peter Jackson?
I think you capture an extra slice of the Venn diagram. I think not everybody knows Peter Jackson directed Lord of the Rings. So I think there are people out there who saw Lord of the Rings because it just got so big and so huge, but they don't know who the director is. You know, there was a time, 20 years ago when I was in my 20s, you could ask me who directed a movie, and I'd be like, I don't know. I like that movie, but I don't know who directed it.
So truth be told, Peter Jackson did not direct it.
Oh, okay.
Christian Rivers directed it. The writers were Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh.
Okay.
If you remember, for Lord of the Rings, for all three movies, I think they were written by Peter, Fran Walsh, and Philippa Boyens. I think the three of them.
Okay.
I think that's what their creative team was. So I don't know where Philippa's name is in this one, but yeah.
I'll take your word for it, because 20 years later, I am only slightly better than I was 20 years ago.
So yeah, and according to Box Office Mojo... Mortal Engines, the number 27th worst opening, and it says super saturated, which I don't know what that means. Super saturated releases, opening at 3,000 theaters.
Oh, okay.
And it says here they stopped counting at the worst 200 openings only. Okay, so for the top 10, we have Hoot, which came out in 2006.
I remember that one.
Made $3.368 million.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was an ecological kind of environmental movie. It was about a owl living on an island and these kids trying to stop developers from. It was a plot out of a Scooby-Doo movie. so I can see why that didn't do very well.
Two, The Seeker, The Dark is Rising, 2007. Mm-hmm. Fun Size, 2012. Burnt, 2015. Hardcore Henry. Meet Dave, What's Your Number? Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Meet Dave, wow. Okay.
And as I skip down the list, Show Dogs, 17.8. Here's Mortal Engines at 27. Mars Needs Moms. Mm-hmm. Astro Boy. Logan Lucky, Runner Runner. The Greatest Showman, 8.8 million.
Oof.
Hey, Happy Time Murders, 9.5.
Not surprising.
Teen Titans Go to the Movies, 10.4. Yeah.
I was looking down this list of what released, you know, it 2 and 3 weeks ago. We really didn't miss much by not being on.
Wow, Instant Family, 183. I've actually heard that that's a lot better than the box office receipts were telling us. All right, so we are going to end our first segment of the show, and we're going to move on over to what's coming out in the theater this weekend. So we are going to talk about three movies. There's actually five, but they're the number four and number five aren't exactly the widest releases, and we have enough to talk about with these three that are coming up. So... I know we didn't talk about the order, so Art, why don't you pick the first one?
I'm going to lead off with the big dog,
okay.
Aquaman. Aquaman is rated 68% fresh on the tomato meter, 157 reviews counted, 106 fresh, 51 rotten. 96% want to see it out of a whopping 15,409 user ratings. So that is a big jump from the kind of numbers we've been seeing lately. From Warner Brothers Pictures and director James Wan comes an action-packed adventure that spans the vast, visually breathtaking underwater world of the seven seas. Aquaman, starring Jason Momoa in the title role, this film reveals the origin story of the half-human, half-Atlantean Arthur Curry and takes him on the journey of his lifetime, one that will not only force him to face who he really is, but to discover if he is worthy of who he was born to be. A king. Rated PG-13 for sequences of sci-fi violence and action and for some language. Genres action and adventure, science fiction and fantasy, directed by James Wan. Written by Will Beale, David Leslie, and Johnson McGoldrick. Runtime 143 minutes. 2 hours and 23 minutes. Almost 2.5 hours long. Wow. In addition to Jason Momoa, we have Amber Heard, Nicole Kidman, William Dafoe, Patrick Wilson, Dolph Lundgren, Ludie Lin, Tamara Morrison, and Yahya Abdul-Mateen II.
Hmm. Just rolls off the tongue.
It does, but I like who he's playing. So I saw the 5-minute extended trailer for this, and oh, I am so excited for this. The first appearance of Black Manta. Oh my goodness, I lost my mind. So I can't wait for this.
This movie comes at an interesting time for DC. Or let me take that back, for Warner Brothers, for the DC Extended Universe, or whatever you want to call it.
Yes, right.
And I have a new story that kind of talks about how big this is going to be for DC. Or again, for Warner Brothers. It sounds like you're bringing a lot of fanboy baggage for this one, Art.
Probably. I really enjoyed Aquaman in the Justice League movie. I like the fact that even though they're underwater, the colors aren't all washed out. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that they show him in his classic orange and green. I like the fact that he has an actual frickin' trident instead of a 5-pronged fork. I just feel like they're moving in the right direction.
I didn't realize you lose points for the improper flatware, but please.
Yes, 100%. He is a king. Use the right utensils.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
Proper etiquette, sir.
Yeah.
We live and we die by it.
Yeah. It's tick a box there. Okay. So what are some of the critics think about this one? I mean, other than looking at the 68%, which I'm a little surprised that it's not higher. But let's start with Peter Travers. Not even an up-for-anything Jason Momoa can save Aquaman from being a joke. Still, the fun is a relief after all the recent DCEU superhero gloom. Any fish epic, that finds time to show us an octopus playing bongos gets a pass on our book. 2.5 out of 5 stars. So that ends up being a rotten review, even though octopus bongos.
Yeah. Well, 2.5 out of 5 stars, that's 50%. So I can see that. But yeah, I don't. See, here's the problem I have with this review. Can save Aquaman from being a joke. These are people who don't really know Aquaman. These are people whose last real experience with Aquaman was probably the Super Friends in the 70s, when Aquaman really was a joke. Aquaman hasn't been that joke in a long time.
Yeah. I did not read any of the comics, so my exposure to Aquaman is probably from the more popular media. But,
right.
Okay, another review is, it seems director James Wan had one overarching goal in making Aquaman. His prime directive, crush the audience into submission. And if you couldn't tell, that was 1 out of 4 stars. That's Soren Anderson from Seattle Times.
Ouch. And yeah.
let's go with some more acerbic humor from across the pond. This is Donald Clark from Irish Times. It looks as if we finally got what we've long asked for. A superhero with the looks and attitude of a forgiving bouncer in a Venice Beach heavy metal bar. 3 out of 5 stars. Never mind what the movie's about or
right,
the performances.
Right.
It's what he looks like.
I probably have a bias, and I'm okay with that.
And not to spend time on other continents, here's Aaron Free from Film Inc. Australia. So utterly entertaining, wickedly inventive, and insanely paced that it comes spinning in the cinemas like a breath of fresh ocean air. He gives it 18.5 out of 20.
Hmm.
Good for that.
Oh, you know, I know a guy who saw it already. He must have saw it through the Amazon Prime thing, because I saw him post about it on Facebook. It had to be over a week ago. And I completely forgot about doing that. So there are people out there who have already seen it who aren't critics.
Yes. Yes. That's not necessarily a bad thing, I don't think.
No, at all. He said that he enjoyed it. I can't wait to see what I think.
Me all
right,
too.
Sir, what is up next?
All right, so we're going to go the other side of the fence. We're going to talk about a Disney movie. So let's talk about Mary Poppins Returns. 78% on the tomato meter. Out of 176 reviews, 138 fresh and 38 rotten. And the audience, 71% liked it, which still gives it fresh popcorn, but not by very much. So here's your description. Oh, I love it when they get in the plot details. Oh, wait, I got to refresh because it cut off the bottom of the thing there. There we go. All right. Oh, boy. Directed and produced by Rob Marshall, Mary Poppins Returns also stars Lin-Manuel Miranda, Ben Whishaw, Emily Mortimer, and Julie Walters. Julie Walters, with Colin Firth and Meryl Streep. The film, which introduces three new Banks' children, played by Pixie Davies, Nathaniel Sala, and newcomer Joel Dawson, also features Dick Van Dyke and Angela Lansbury. The film is set in the 1930s Depression-era London, the time period of the original novels, and is drawn from the wealth of material in P.L. Travers' additional 7 books. In the story, Michael Whishaw and Jane Mortimer are now grown up, with Michael, his 3 children, and their housekeeper, Ellen Walters, living on Cherry Tree Lane. After Michael suffers a personal loss, the enigmatic nanny, Mary Poppins, Blunt, re-enters the lives of the Banks family, and along with the optimistic Shreep lamplighter, Jack, uses her unique magical skills to help the family rediscover the joy and wonder missing in their lives. Mary Poppins also introduces the children to a new assortment of colorful and whimsical characters, including her eccentric cousin Topsy, Streep. The film is produced by Marshall, John DeLuca, and Mark Platt. The screenplay is by David McGee, based on the Mary Poppins stories by P.L. Travers, with Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman writing all new songs and Shaiman composing an original score. Rating is PG for some mild thematic elements of brief action. Genre is kids and family, musical and performing arts, and science fiction and fantasy. Written by Dave McGee, directed by Rob Marshall. 130 minutes of musical magic. Did I mention? I think I
everybody.
Mentioned, yeah, I think I mentioned.
Yeah, you mentioned everybody. Oh,
Angela Lansbury as Balloon Lady. So, yeah, another Disney retread we didn't need.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see. I'm sure I'll end up seeing it because Aubrey wants to see it. And I think, I'm pretty sure Brittany does, too. So.
Yeah, I should probably keep an open mind, but based on seeing the Lion King trailer, I don't know.
I've heard some things about that one. I haven't seen it myself, but I've heard some things.
Let's go with Rex Reed from The Observer, talking about the critic blurbs at the bottom of Rotten Tomatoes. The movie is full of joyous, unexpected things to applaud. Rating 3 out of 4 stars. Peter Howell from the Toronto Star. There's more than a spoonful of sugar in this felicitous revisitation. And to go with the female perspective, at least one, Monica Castillo from RogerEbert.com. An odd knockoff that will work for some audiences and leave others craving a rewatch of an old favorite. 1.5 out of 4.
Ouch.
So, yeah, this one's a hair higher than Aquaman, but it seems like people are enjoying it.
Yeah, I think it'll do all right. I think it'll you know, it has its niche.
Yeah, it's just, I remember we used to watch Mary Poppins all the time when the kids were little.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to the third movie, which I left for you because I know you also have a connection to this source material as well.
Yeah. Okay, last but not least, we have Bumblebee. 93% on the tomato meter. 91 reviews counted, 85 fresh, 6 rotten. 92% want to see it out of 1,900 user ratings. On the run in the year 1987, Bumblebee finds refuge in a junkyard in a small California beach town. Charlie, Haley Stanfield, on the cusp of turning 18 and trying to find a place in the world, discovers Bumblebee, battle-scarred and broken. When Charlie revives him, she quickly learns this is no ordinary yellow VW bug. Rated PG-13 for sequences of sci-fi action violence, action-adventure, science fiction fantasy, directed by Travis Knight, written by Christina Hodson. Hodson. Runtime 1 hour and 14 minutes. We have John Cena, John Ortiz, Pamela Adion, Steven Snedker.
We should make a correction that it's 114 minutes.
What did I say?
You said one hour and 14 minutes. So it's
I can't stop doing that.
An hour and 53 minutes. Almost 54, excuse me.
Right. Almost 2 hours long.
Yeah.
I've seen the commercials for this. I think they're going in a good direction. I think this is what the franchise needs to be revived, and we'll see where it goes once it actually comes out.
Yeah, so 93% is not something to take lightly.
No, it is not.
Considering where Transformers is coming from.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I really like Haley Steinfeld. I've enjoyed every movie that I've seen that she's been in, but I was disappointed that she was going to get involved in this whole Transformers business. But it looks like they've taken a turn production-wise. But yeah, this I might have to go see this one.
What else is she from?
She was in I first noticed her in the True Grit.
Okay, I didn't see the new True Grit.
True Grit with Jeff Bridges, and I'm looking at her.
Yeah, I just pulled it up myself. Well, okay,
really, she had kind of a small role. But Begin Again, which was a smaller film with Mark Ruffalo that I really enjoyed, Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley. She was in Pitch Perfect 2, and another movie I really enjoyed her in was The Edge of 17, which was a smaller kind of a postmodern John Hughes type movie. And she's also the voice of Gwen Stacy in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I see that.
there's a commercial with some of the voice actors, and you know that, so the two guys that, well, the one guy who does Peter Parker and the other guy who does Miles Morales are like, yeah, there's all these great other characters, you know, Spider Girl, and then she shows up saying no, It's Spider-Gwen, you idiots.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty funny. Another thing that I was kind of curious about is, who is this Travis Knight person? You know, 93% for what seems like his first movie? Because I've never heard of this guy. Well, not that I follow every director's lives or anything, but he was...
Oh, my goodness.
Director and producer with Kubo and the Two Strings.
Uh-huh.
So maybe this is the start of something wonderful happening here.
Well, look at this. I clicked on his name. Highest rated movies, Kubo and the Two Strings, 97% on the tomato meter. Paranorman, 88% on the tomato meter. What did he do for Paranorman? Producer.
He is producer for Paranorman and the Box Trolls.
And the Box Trolls, yeah. So he's all up in Leica's business. Mm-hmm.
Which is not a bad thing.
No. Oh, and Missing Link. Isn't that one of theirs coming up? Who's doing that one? Yeah. Yep. It's their 2019, the next movie from Leica. He's involved with it. Producer credit as well. So yeah, seems like a real up-and-comer, somebody to keep an eye on.
Yes, very much so, very much so. Okay, so that's going to end our look at the movies coming out for this weekend. And so now we're going to move on over to Share Time. This is the part of the show where Art and myself and any voicemailers will tell us what they've been up to since the last show. And we've been gone a while, so no pressure, Art, on what you've been up to. But first, that we have a voicemail from Tad, so we're going to play that now.
Hey, Backseat Box Office, this is Tad calling in. Hopefully this will make it. You guys are probably recording tonight if you're recording, but anyway, what I've been watching. So, haven't really been watching a whole lot lately, haven't been going to a lot of movies. We've been building a guest house. So it's kind of, that's taking up most of my time and money. So, but anyway, on Netflix, I've been watching this show called The Last Kingdom. They just posted the third season, and I really like it. It deals with England in the 800s, I think. So it's the Saxons, and then the Danes are coming in and trying to take over, and it has, you know, kind of... King Alfred is the first, you know, guy to unite all of England or whatever, and he's in it, and, someone's playing him, but, and then there's a fictional character who's kind of the main character, and so it's a historical fiction. It's based on a book series I've read by Bernard Cornwell. Really good show. The first season was actually on, like, A&E or something like that, and, they dropped the show, and then Netflix picked it up and has done seasons 2 and 3, so there's 3 seasons of it. I really like it. I recommend it. And that's pretty much what I've been watching. So great show, guys, and I'll talk to you later. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Tad. Thanks for checking in. Yeah, it's been a while since we recorded, so... Hopefully you get back in the swing of things, and hopefully you can too. And we also, or Richard, anyone else that wants to join in the conversation here. All right. So now that we got the voicemails out of the way, Art, what have you been up to?
Okay. So I have been getting some things done. I started BoJack Horseman. I listened to a podcast it's called Animation Generation, and all they talk about is animated stuff, whether it's Japanese anime, American cartoons, movie, theatrical release stuff, just anything and everything, Netflix originals, anything under the sun. If it's animated, they are willing to talk about it. And I remembered, this gets a lot of talk about it on the Backseat Producers podcast. Tony Mast and Adam Pania have often talked about BoJack Horseman, blah, 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 blah. And so it sounded interesting. It's kind of it's dark, a little nihilistic, and I thought I'd give it a try. And then I saw it was like 5 seasons long, and I'm like, oh my goodness, that's a bit of a commitment. Or at least there's 5 seasons of just of what's available on Netflix. I don't know how many actual seasons there are, but there are 5 seasons right now on Netflix. I watched the first episode, and I was kind of meh on it. I'm like, but you know, you got to give things time to find their feet. You know, It's gotten 5 seasons; it can't be bad. It's really started to grow on me. I think I'm about maybe 6 episodes in, and I've gotten more interested. I don't know if I'm going to stick with it though, because that's a lot of commitment. So we'll see. I'll keep you guys up to date on how that's going and whether or not I'm really getting into it more. But it's pretty dark, and I'm not sure about it. She-Ra dropped. She-Ra just got. It just won the award for Best New Animated Series for 2018 from Animation Magazine. And it was fantastic. It was absolutely, totally worth watching.
I was going to ask you about that because it said on the Rotten Tomatoes, it said most popular TV on Rotten Tomatoes, She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, 100%.
Yeah, no, it is. It is fantastic. It is absolutely fantastic. This is how I felt about when I watched that Hilda movie. It just hit all the right notes. It is right on. It's pitch perfect for what it is trying to accomplish and how it carries it across and its characters, and it's just really, really well done. It made me come to the realization that She-Ra is a magical girl cartoon. In the vein of things like Winx Club or Sailor Moon or, you know, all those magical girl transformation. I never thought about it before, but it has that sequence where she transforms into She-Ra and you know, she gets her magical powers and, you know, does her thing. And it was something I watched with Aubrey, and it was just thoroughly fantastic. I just can't say enough how much I absolutely enjoyed it. And I watched a little bit of She-Ra when I was younger, back in the He-Man days, and it was just on. You know, I have that fondness because, you know, there weren't as many things on back in the 80s, so you took what you could get when you could get it, kind of a thing. And this is very well done, and I think more people should watch it, especially if you have a young daughter. It's absolutely worth watching. Let's see what else. Another thing I started was Garen Lagann. It is a giant robot anime. It's on Netflix. So she was on Netflix. BoJack Horseman was on Netflix. I've been, you know, just working my Netflix account lately. I'm only 2 episodes into that one, but it seemed very interesting. It's another one that I got turned on to thanks to this Generation Animation. And so, yeah, it's filling my time nicely. I'm always down for giant robots. This one seems very interesting. This one's only 1 season, 13 episodes. I don't know if that's all there is available on Netflix or if that's all there is, period. If it's just a closed-end story. They've got a couple of things like that up on Netflix where it's like it's 13 and done. And it tells its story beginning to end. And I like when they do things like that because it's easy to consume and then move on to something else. Okay. Non-Netflix, non-at-home television things. Brittany's birthday was earlier this month, and she wanted to see a movie. I was like, absolutely. We went and saw A Star Is Born. With Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, and it was very good. Bradley Cooper once again showing his vocal range for portraying a character. This is the third time this story's been done. It's based on a true story. First time I believe was in the 50s. Second time was in the 70s with Barbara Streisand. And it is just, it's a very powerful story. It's very well done. The music in it is great. Brittany was listening to all the music on repeat up to and past when we went to go see it. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I highly recommend it if you're into that whole kind of biopic feel, musical type, you know, like things like Ray and what was the one? One with Eddie Murphy with the I am blanking.
Oh, I know it's one.
Dream Girls.
Yeah, Dream Girls.
You know, anything along those lines. If you like stuff that deals with people in the music industry and whatnot, you're going to really enjoy this film because it's really well done. And the last thing I saw, I only just saw it this past Monday. I went and saw Into the Spider-Verse, the new Spider-Man movie. And I took Aubrey. We went to see it. We both thoroughly enjoyed it. It's really well done. I don't know how they spent $90 million on an animated feature, but okay. I think they'll be all right. You know, $35 million opener. But it was right on point. It told its story, brought in its characters very well. I really appreciated Gwen Stacy. And seeing that Miles Morales kind of front and center, a lot of strong black characters. Well, he's black and Hispanic, so, but it was just really, really well done. I thoroughly enjoyed it. If you like comic book movies at all, it is totally worth seeing. And that, sir, wraps up my share time for the past few weeks.
All right. Well, I really don't have too much to bring. As far as TV, I can't remember the last time I opened Netflix. Mainly, I've just been watching Friends and Mom reruns that come on a Nick at Night.
Okay.
Greatly enjoy Mom. Oh my God, I can't. It's just.
I don't even know what is Mom.
Okay, so Mom. Is basically about a woman that has a teenage daughter and then a younger son. She's divorced and she is forced to live with her mother. And they, for long stretches of both of their lives, either both of them or one of them were alcoholic drug users. And the show is basically about them putting their lives back together. And so Anna Faris is the is basically the main character, and God, I just blanked on the older one. Allison Janney older one, and it's basically the same production and writing team that did Two and a Half Men, Mike and Molly, Big Bang Theory, but I think they do a really good job of balancing humor and good story, as far as these two women redeeming their lives.
Okay.
And as with any great sitcom, the supporting cast is just fantastic. I can't remember any of their names, but it just every episode there's something that makes it just laugh out loud. So I really enjoy Mom. It can get a little heavy-handed sometimes, I don't think it's like exploitation. Two and a Half Men was a little more exploitation, I think. But I think they kind of got better. But I really enjoy Mom. Okay. But with that being said, I have watched two movies that either came out this year. So the first one I got from the library is Uncle Drew. Uncle Drew is a sports movie. And it's kind of a throwback sports movie because it reminded me of, you know, Major League and all the string of just the wacky, super unrealistic, but still funny type of movie. So Uncle Drew is about, I can't remember the character's name, but Little Rel plays this guy who's trying to put a team together for a streetball tournament. And the winning team in the streetball tournament gets $10,000. Okay. And so he loses his star player to his rival coach, played by Nick Kroll. And so his buddies at the barbershop said, you got to get Uncle Drew. He's the best streetball player we've seen ever. And he can probably still play, even though he's like super old. And so he goes to find Uncle Drew, and he convinces Uncle Drew to get the band back together so they can win this tournament. And so, but he says, it's my team. And so he gets all his buddies back from the day to play. And the strange thing is, they probably could have got some very good actors, but they got all ex-NBA professional basketball players.
Okay.
In this movie. And they did a great job considering that they're athletes.
Right.
Or they're, you know, they're professional athletes. I don't think that there's been a lot of, that they've been in a lot of movies. I mean, because the guy who plays Uncle Drew, I think he's in his late 20s still. But he did great. And I always like Shaq, even though Kazam or whatever that
right.
was pretty terrible.
Uh-huh.
But he's not the, you know, he doesn't have a lot to do in this movie. But they kind of, you know, it's kind of an, I don't want to say interesting, but kind of a funny story on how they're all interrelated. And there's one scene with Chris Webber, who played in the NBA for a while. He's the preacher. That's his name. And he's about to do a baptism, and he kind of, like, he's taking the baby, like, behind the back just before you, like, dunk. You're going to dunk the kid, and they're like, you're not going to dunk that kid. So, I mean, it does, that's where it gets kind of unbelievable kind of thing. But
right.
There was a lot of laughs. They laughed at themselves. There were a couple inside jokes based on their playing days. And Nick Kroll is awesome, as always. Tiffany Haddish is also in this. Playing the girlfriend of the coach in the beginning, who ends up switching sides when she realizes that she's with the loser, even though that's not necessarily the case. It is just escapist fun, and I had a great time. I ended up watching it twice before I took it back to the library.
Okay.
So I don't expect too much, but I greatly enjoyed Uncle Drew. And then the second movie I heard about because it's probably going to be nominated for a lot of awards. But this was a film that was written and directed by a stand-up comedian. I think it's his first film. And this is Eighth Grade. This is an indie movie, basically following this young lady, an eighth grader, and the struggles that we all have just trying to navigate eighth grade with our psyche and our brain intact. Mm-hmm. And it is updated because this, you know, it starts out that she has her own YouTube channel and doing videos about how to do certain things. Excuse me, like how to act confident and do other things. The actress that they got to play the young girl, she did really good. She is not, I mean, she's not like, I mean, to me, they very easily could have cast, you know, those actresses from Disney Channel.
Right.
Right, that, you know, are definitely could pass as models type of thing. She is not that, I didn't think. And it's, for me, it was an above average movie that there weren't a lot of surprises in it, but it being contemporary on how much that she relates to people through her phone and through the computers, I think is something that is definitely something you need to be learned and something you need to navigate. But the absolute best reason to see this movie is Friday night dinner with her and her dad, because she, her mom is out of the picture. So it's just her and her dad, and the dad is trying to talk to her when she just wants to be on her phone. I've had these conversations. I watched it with my daughter and we both kind of looked at each other. And it was just funny. And I'm sure that, those days will be coming with Aubrey.
Oh, we already have it.
If they're not having already.
We already have it. No devices at the table when we're having dinner.
Yeah, but it was nice to see a film about junior high or high school. And I'm just me being an old man here, that there wasn't a lot of language and there wasn't F you and F this all over the place. And I was kind of expecting it, considering that he's a stand-up comedian. You know, they kind of, some comedians don't have, I guess what I'm trying to say is, based on being a stand-up comedian, that usually you hear a lot of that language. But anyways, but I didn't think it would have had place, and it didn't. So I really enjoyed Eighth Grade, not as much as Uncle Drew, because there are some parts that get kind of heavy. But I did enjoy Eighth Grade. So yeah, Uncle Drew and Eighth Grade. All right, so unless you have anything else to say about any trailers you saw recently.
Oh, talking about the Aquaman trailer?
Yeah, you talked about the 5 minutes of Aquaman.
I did. Yeah, I was actually at A Star Is Born. So I actually got to see that on the big screen, the 5 minute extended trailer, because it was actually, I believe, an IMAX screen that we watched that on, because that was just the time that was appropriate. So it just made it even bigger than life. So all that gushing that I did about how good Aquaman looks, I saw it on a ginormous screen. So that really helped. But that 5 minute extended trailer, they really show a lot. It looks, like I said, it looks good. It's just another reason that I want to see it. And I'm ready. I'm ready for it to be good. But
all right. So nothing about the Infinity War Endgame trailer?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
Haven't seen it.
Interesting. All right. Now we're going to get to the last segment of the show, and that's the news segment. So this is where Art and myself talk about things crack-a-lackin' in Hollywood or parts unknown related to TV, movies, or whatever. So, Art, what do you got?
Crack-a-lackin', Madagascar. I will never forget. All right. Captain Marvel tops most anticipated 2019 poll. The IMDb has released a list of the 10 most anticipated movies based on page views and movie meter rankings used on the IMDb Pro service. The list skews mostly towards films that have already released a trailer or stills, as they're likely the ones in most people's consciousness as of this time. And so sequels, remakes, and superheroes dominate the list, along with the newest films of the two of the biggest filmmakers around. So the list is: number one, Captain Marvel; number two, Avengers Endgame; number three, Dark Phoenix; number four, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood; number five, The Irishman; number six, It Chapter Two; number seven, Glass; number eight, Joker; number nine, Aladdin; and number 10, Hellboy. I am interested in almost all of these movies. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't know what that one is. Do you know that one off the top of your head?
Well, let me just say that one of my news stories is 21 Reasons We Can't Wait for 2019, coming from Rotten Tomatoes. And number 20, Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Well, there you go.
Which says here, some of the gloss have come off Quentin Tarantino of late, while The Hateful Eight and Django Unchained were both certified fresh. The former, blah, blah, blah. And this year's New York Times article focusing on alleged treatment of Uma Thurman while shooting Kill Bill did the director's reputation a few favors. Yet we can't help but be excited about his ninth feature film, which is set in L.A. during the time of the Manson murders and focuses in on an actor and his stunt double trying to get ahead in Hollywood. That duo is played by DiCaprio and Brad Pitt. They're two 90s wall posters stitched together at last, while Margot Robbie stars as Sharon Tate. So that's what I know about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That is more than I knew 30 seconds ago.
All right. So since we kind of jumped into this list, we'll just run through it real quick. True Detective Season 3. I'm not an HBO subscriber, so other than Game of Thrones, I haven't really watched anything on HBO, so not so much. Same thing for Downton Abbey, the movie.
Excuse me. I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, I think I just changed the demographic by saying that. Number 18, the best video game adaptations ever are maybe coming. So the best video game adaptation right now is Rampage at 52% on the Rotten Tomato meter.
Okay.
We're thinking two films will challenge the city-smashing Dwayne Johnson flick next year. First up, and the most likely of the two contenders to push his way into the fresh zone, is Detective Pikachu, featuring Ryan Reynolds, I don't know what's going on, as the voice of a CGI crime-solving version of the beloved yellow Pokemon. The second video game adaptation to keep a close eye on is Sonic the Hedgehog, a live-action and animation mix that features Ben Schwartz, a.k.a. Park and Rex Gene Ralphio, as the voice of the speedy hero and, wait for it, Jim Carrey as his nemesis, Dr. Robotnik.
Dr. Robotnik, my goodness.
Also stars James Marsden and Tika Sumpter. Guava Island, I guess a movie with Donald Glover and Rihanna, which is a tropical thriller. Number 14, Disney's possibly game-changing streaming service. I think we've talked about that before.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
Let me see. 13, I don't know if we're talking about Apple. 12, a March-April horror onslaught. As A Quiet Place and Get Out have shown, the year's early months can be a lucrative time for studio horror, and next year's first 4 months are particularly crowded with treats for genre fans. January kicks off with Escape Room and Eli, both released January 4th, but it's March and April that should have horror fiends most pumped. On March 1st, Focus Features releases Greta, a single white grandma stalker tale from Neil Jordan that sees Chloe Grace Moretz pursued by an absolutely batshit Isabel Huppert. Then on March 15th, just over 2 years since Get Out was released, Jordan Peele's follow-up, Us, will open, starring Elizabeth Moss, Lupita Nyong'o, and Winston Duke. It follows a family whose beachside vacation goes horrifically awry when they realize they're not as isolated as they thought. Next, Stephen King adaptation Pet Sematary opens on April 5th. And then we have The Curse of La Llorona, which released possibly the most effective creepy trailer we've seen in the last 6 months, bringing the Mexican folktale of the Weeping Woman to the big screen on April 19th. Number 11, The Grown-Up Losers Club of It, Chapter 2. 10, Twilight Zone with Jordan Peele. Number 9, First Name Mister, Last Name Glass. Mm-hmm. Glass coming out. We were talking about Lion King. Number 7, Three Big TV W's. Is it W's? Okay. Watchmen, Witcher, and What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay.
Interesting. John Wick 3, Parabellum. We're gonna roll right on by, Joker. Stranger Things Season 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, I'm a little worried because they said it's loosely based on Fletch this season, which is rather... No, right. It's majorly odd. That's all I'm going to say.
It's odd, but they've got a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? They've built up a lot of goodwill. They have
a lot of cred.
They've got a lot of cred right now. Yeah, they've got a lot of currency to burn with my trust of how they did with season 1 and 2. They'd have to lose a lot of people and stray very far from the direction they're heading for me to be like, nope, you jumped the shark, you're done.
Number 3, JJ's saga ending Star Wars 9.
Mm-hmm.
Abrams is back behind the camera for the conclusion to the trilogy he kicked off with The Force Awakens. Plot details are scant, but if the series' 2 previous entries are any indication, both The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi are certified fresh with tomato meter scores in the 90s. This should be another thrilling, if potentially divisive, entry. Either way, it will definitely be one of the most poignant Star Wars films, with the late Carrie Fisher making her final on-screen appearance as Princess Leia / General Organa.
Mm.
At number 2, Avengers: Endgame and the Reverse Snap. I don't think there's not much to say about that one. And number 1, Game of Thrones Season 8 and Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So, no Captain Marvel on this list. Interesting. So that was an extremely long-winded look at.
Yes.
21 things that Rotten Tomatoes is looking at that we're kind of looking at too. So, Art, what do you got next?
All right. Okay. Mortal Engines to lose $100 million at the box office. That was fast, is the first line of the story. With only 1 weekend under its belt, Variety reports that the Peter Jackson-produced steampunk fantasy adventure Mortal Engines is on track to lose up to $100 to $125 million for Universal Pictures. The film opened worldwide last week in the U.S. this past Friday and has so far pulled in a mere $42 million globally from a budget of over $100 million, along with tens of millions spent in marketing and promotion. In the United States this past weekend, it debuted to a disastrous 7.5 million and fifth, a far cry from both Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which took the top spot, 35.4. We had a reporter on this, and Clint Eastwood's The Mule. Reviews for the film weren't terrible, but were not good enough by any means. Jeff Bach, an analyst with the Exhibitor Relations, says, "This is a true Christmas disaster and a lump of coal for Universal. They took a big swing and they struck out. Everybody is having a tough go trying to appeal to that young adult marketplace. It's a generation gap between studios and what they think young audiences like. TV is getting it right and movies aren't. Various studios passed on the project over the years, as it was always a hard film to market. The film's failure comes after Universal has had a bumper few months with major successes like Halloween, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and The Grinch. So there you go. They're going to lose all kind of money on it. I need to go see it quick before it passes out of the theater.
Okay, so this is definitely under the category of preaching to arts choir. So from my favorite website, crack.com, why Aquaman is the DC movie universe's Iron Man.
Okay.
This Christmas sees the release of Aquaman, DC's epic story of a rugged underwater king, not a 90s throwback about some dude who loves Barbie girl. The much-hyped movie starring snow cone connoisseur Jason Momoa comes at an odd time for the DC Extended Universe. While Aquaman is ostensibly set in the same timeline as Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, and Justice League, you might have noticed that continuity seems to be hopelessly falling apart. Current cinematic Superman Henry Cavill was fired by Warner Brothers, and Ben Affleck is more likely returned to the role of douchey Mallrats villain than Caped Crusader. Fans still love Wonder Woman, but one character isn't enough to support a crumbling cinematic universe, right? So, in this perilous time for the franchise, the powers that be are letting it all ride on Aquaman? After three subpar movies failed at rejuvenating the two most famous superheroes in pop culture, Aquaman may very well decide the fate of the DC cinematic empire, which is a little like putting the equipment manager into the big game after the quarterback is concussed. After all, Aquaman doesn't exactly have the pedigree of Superman or Batman. His screen debut was a weird 1980s fan film, and after the success of Smallville, producers tried the same teen-friendly approach with Aquaman. Sadly, the pilot chronicling the adventures of beach bum A.C. Curry wasn't picked up. The closest we've gotten to a big budget Aquaman project was a non-superhero TV series, a season 2 arc of Entourage, that show HBO made before wisely replacing bros with ice zombies, finds protagonist Vincent Chase starring in James Cameron's Aquaman. And indeed, James Cameron would direct a damn Arby's commercial if it meant journeying into the ocean depths. The studio pitches a darker, grittier movie, but because it's Aquaman, the costume still ends up looking like underwater Elton John. Aquaman was to suffer further indignities. He also showed up as the star of his own animated TV show, but less as a hero and more of a punchline. The Aquaman and Friends Action Hour found the titular hero hosting a terrible children's program. I don't know how to say that. The show was only ever made available on Cartoon Network, Latin American website for some reason. Has anyone ever considered making an actual Aquaman movie before now? Back in 2004, after Spider-Man and X-Men paved the way, there was talk about bringing Aquaman to the big screen. But rumor had it that the producers wanted to make a goofy screwball comedy because he's such a stupid character. So now DC has turned a much maligned character into the saving grace of their movieverse, which, when you think about it, is basically what Marvel first did. When it set out to build the MCU, Marvel had already sold off its A-list characters like Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four. So they instead had to rehabilitate C-listers like Thor, previously a gag in Adventures in Babysitting, and Iron Man, who most people thought was a robot. So by screwing up Batman and Superman so badly, DC has accidentally stumbled upon their competitors' winning formula. They're forced to try to make good movies with less popular characters. Even the screenwriters of Avengers Infinity War, Christopher Markus and Stephen McFeely, suggested that this tactic would work better for DC. I would look at what Marvel did out of necessity, go through the vast world and go, that guy or that girl, and go, let's just make a really good movie, not a universe, to see what happens. Making movies with less iconic characters also give filmmakers more freedom, in that audiences bring less baggage of expectations with them. Like, it's hard to imagine fans being bummed out if it was Clarion the Witch Boy who snapped the villain's neck. Boy, that's an odd reference. Early positive reactions seemingly confirm that strategy's success, with audiences comparing James Wan's Aquaman to a Phase 1 MCU film. Probably because it's more interesting to have new characters revealed through their own origin stories than on Batman's thumb drive. So, yeah. So, Aquaman's going to be huge.
I think so. I'm happy.
By the way, I clicked through to Clarion the Witch Boy. Mm-hmm. Clarion the Witch Boy is a fictional character, a supervillain appearing in American comic books published by DC. Clarion the Witch Boy first appeared in The Demon, number 7, March 1973, and was created by Jack Kirby.
Okay. I am unfamiliar.
Same here. Same here.
Okay. All right. Still speaking on comics. Aruna is the female lead in Marvel's Morbius. Adria Arjona? I do not know how to pronounce that. A-R-J-O-N-A. Arjona?
I was going to say, only if we had a Latino to pronounce it.
And I am a coconut, sir. Brown on the outside, white on the inside.
All right, thanks for sharing. Go ahead.
You're welcome. Okay, so she's from Emerald City, Pacific Rim Uprising, is in talks to play Martine, the female lead opposite Jared Leto in the Marvel Comics feature adaptation of Morbius the Living Vampire at Sony Pictures. Daniel Espinosa is directing the spin-off film, which follows renowned biochemist Dr. Michael Morbius, who attempts to cure a fatal blood disease by injecting himself with a treatment serum derived from bats. This transforms him into the anti-hero Morbius, who has all the qualities of a vampire, including a taste for human blood. In the comics, Martine is engaged to Morbius and becomes a potential victim to his bloodlust as he grapples with the transpiration. Burke Sharpless and Matt Sanza co-wrote the script, while Avi Arad and Matt Tolmach will produce with Lucas Foster. I thought this was interesting because you always hear that those talks that Marvel and DC want their people to be
exclusive.
Exclusive, yeah. Now, this isn't the DCEU. This is over at Sony Pictures. So, but still, I like it when they have people crossing over and being in multiple things. And, yeah, so if Jared Leto's busy doing this, he can't be over there screwing up the Joker, you know, so that's good. But anyway, so yeah, I don't know. Morbius Living Vampire, I think it's interesting. I know of the character. I haven't read much in the way of his comics, but I do remember him from like the Marvel superhero updates. So that's a little bit I know about Morbius the Living Vampire.
Hmm. All right, let's wind down a little bit.
Okay.
Benicio del Toro is the Dora the Explorer movie's bad guy.
Okay.
This is another one. This is another one from Cracked. I'm just going to read it. As an adult, it can be surprising to discover which famous actors were voicing beloved animated characters. Who knew that Orson Welles voiced an evil Transformer god?
I knew that. Unicron.
J.K. Simmons was the yellow M&M. Or that Vin Diesel played everyone's favorite monosyllabic Colossus twice. But if you thought that the recent hiring of Nicolas Cage as the noir Spider-Man in Enter the Spider-Verse was the weirdest pairing of intense actors with a whimsical kids movie, Nickelodeon has that beat. This week, it was announced that Benicio del Toro will be joining the live-action movie of the charmingly bilingual animated education show Dora the Explorer. While the movie has already been shot, del Toro will be providing the voice of the CGI fox Swiper. Now, for any reader who isn't a parent or doesn't get high while watching kids' cartoons, Swiper is the main antagonist to Dora's exploring endeavors. A thief who covets every single item Dora happens to be holding, he will often sneak up to Dora to steal plot-important items, then chuck them into the grass while shouting, "You'll never find it now!" Dora can prevent this by repeating the words, Art?
Swiper, no swiping.
Which shames him to going, "Aw, man," and retreating. As a side note, go ahead.
It doesn't shame him. He actually has a curse put on him by a witch. And when anyone says swiper, no swiping, he has to stop stealing. He's cursed. Most people don't know that. It's in his origin.
Hmm. Okay. As a side note, how the hell are they going to make a two-hour movie out of this? It's not unusual for big-name actors to start making and hating movies their young kids can enjoy. But casting del Toro is still a weird choice for the DCU, Dora Cinematic Universe. Not only has he built a long career out of playing unsettling, intimidating characters who look at you that like they're trying to figure out how to kill you in your sleep, but he's also famous for some of the weirdest and mumbliest vocal choices in film. Then again, he just might be the kind of eccentrically sinister actor a character like Swiper has been waiting for his entire animated life. Think about it. Not only is Swiper some sort of demonic presence that needs chanting to banish, but he's also chaotic and a nihilist. He's the kind of criminal who'd steal whatever the hero is holding, only to throw it away.
Yep.
Because for him, the villainy is its own reward. He's not a fox with a plan. He just does things. Dora has plans. The map has plans. Hell, he is a plan. Okay. They're schemers who are trying to control their little animated world. All Swiper does is show Dora how pathetic her attempts to control things really are. Swiper, he just wants to watch the world burn.
He does. So, yeah, he does.
Maybe Del Toro isn't such inappropriate casting after all.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. All right. What do you got next?
All right. I will go with the Bruce Willis signs 3-film movie pass deal. So we've been off for a few weeks. We haven't talked anything about movie pass. I didn't actually look to see what's been up with them lately. I did come across this, but this is on the movie side. They created a production house. This is not on the abysmally failed movie pass ticketed, you know, collaboration with the theater thing. So, but anyway, Bruce Willis has closed a 3-picture deal with MoviePass Films, which is handled by the company's co-founders Randall Emmett, George Furla, and Ted Farnsworth. Willis has made 14 films with Emmett, Furla, and Oasis, including 16 Blocks, Lay the Favorite, and so this will continue that relationship. So yeah, I didn't realize that that so many people were involved in so many of his movies. It's interesting. So the first of the 3 films is Trauma Center, which will begin shooting in February in Miami. So yeah, we'll see what comes of this 3-picture deal and how MoviePass does on its movie producing side away from its ticket sales side.
All right, so we're going to continue on this episode of Backseat Comic Book Box Office. By my last story is Sony to patent the Spider-Verse look. You're asking about how they spent so much money on this?
Okay.
Sony Animation Spider-Man : Into the Spider-Verse is getting rave reviews for pretty much everything about it, including its unique visual look. Now, Deadline reports that the studio has filed with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to get patent protection for the project's unique animation process. A half dozen specific animation techniques and technologies are specified, and Sony may have to wait anywhere from 3 to 5 years to hear if the patents are granted. The film used a process that is a blend of computer animation and with hand-drawn touch-ups that's so complicated and complex that every second in the film took a week to render.
Wow.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse opens in cinemas worldwide tomorrow. Obviously, this is very old and is currently scoring at 98% and an 86 out of 100 on Metacritic. So, yeah, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. We can go ahead and wrap up there. I looked at this last story, and it's not really worth talking about.
All right. So, that's going to do it for this episode of Backseat Box Office. So, everyone, thank you for sticking with us after this little hiatus. But, as usual, thank you for listening. Our website is backseatproducers.com. Where you can find us and the other show, backseatproducers.com. Again, the website's backseatproducers.com. You can also leave us a voicemail. Instructions are on the left side of the webpage. Other than that, everyone take care of yourself. Go watch a movie, and we will catch you next time. Art, what do you want to say?
Good night, everybody.